Hello and welcome to a special edition of Power Play for this Friday, April 3rd. I'm Joyce Napier at the end of another difficult and challenging week. Today on the show, Ontario releases sobering projections on how many people could be killed by COVID-19 in just that province.
These numbers are stark and they're sobering. They tell a story. These numbers tell the story of Ontario's fight against COVID-19. And the reality is, the early chapters of our story have already been written.
Sobering indeed. The Ontario government sets the course of the pandemic at 18 months to 2 years. During that time, the province projects that with public health measures in place, there could be 3,000 to 15,000 deaths. But without those critical measures like physical distancing and self-isolation, that projection would have been 100,000 deaths. Now, a key component of the government's fight against this virus is the mammoth task of procuring critical medical equipment, PPEs, as they are called, personal protective equipment. That got harder today. President Donald Trump is blocking manufacturer 3M from exporting vital N95 masks to Canada.
We are receiving essential supplies from the United States, but the United States also receives essential supplies and products and indeed healthcare professionals from Canada every single day. I think of the thousands of nurses, for example, who cross the bridge in Windsor to work in the Detroit medical system every single day. These are things that Americans rely on, and it would be a mistake to create blockages or reduce the amount of back and forth trade of essential goods and services, including medical goods across our border. That is the point we're making very clearly to the American administration right now.
Coming up on the show, how is Cabinet responding to this U.S. equipment lockdown? And will Ottawa follow Ontario's example and release its own modeling of the potential virus spread? Families, Children and Social Development Minister Ahmed Hussein joins us. And why is Donald Trump clamping down on the export of medical equipment? Former U.S. Ambassador to Canada Bruce Hayman is standing by. Plus, Ontario's former Chief Medical Officer Richard Chabas joins our press gallery to close out the show. This American order to ban the export of N95 masks comes under something called the Defense Production Act. What does this mean for Canadians and what other shipments could be blocked as a result? Let's get some answers from our southern neighbors. Bruce Hayman was Barack Obama's ambassador to Canada. He joins us from Chicago. Hello, Ambassador. Thank you for being there for Power Play and hope you and your family are well. President Donald Trump has invoked the Defense Production Act. Explain briefly, if you could, what powers does that give the president?
It gives him extraordinary powers. It actually can force companies to produce specific equipment that maybe they don't even make, or direct companies that make specific things to produce it in a certain quantity, in a certain way, and provide the government. And it's meant in the time of war or other, you know, circumstances like the circumstance that we find ourselves in now.
So, you know, in your opinion, this is justified, that the president needed to take this measure, you think? American companies would not have stepped up?
No. So here's the situation. We have to go back because we get ourselves in where we are now. The president knew that a pandemic was a possibility because I was with the Obama administration when this was the number one issue that kept Barack Obama up at night. And he left for the next administration plans on how to tackle a pandemic if it happens and a team in place to do that. In addition to President Trump getting rid of that team and shelving the plan, he had the advice and counsel of his intelligence community, the scientific community, and medical community telling him in January, we got a problem coming and it's big. And so he didn't plan for this. He didn't initiate the building of these masks, the ventilators, the equipment. He didn't prepare America for this. In fact, he denied it just a few weeks ago that this was a hoax. And so here we are in a, now we're in a desperate situation. And he does, in the fog of war, he's making decisions without thinking strategically. It's all tactical. Reactions, not thinking, not understanding the implications and the importance of the U.S.-Canada relationship. And that needed to be taken into account when making a decision like this, and at least collaborate and cooperate and work together with our Canadian partners in developing an understanding and approach that could protect Canadian and American lives. You're always there for us. Canadians have been there for us in foxholes in Afghanistan. You've been there for us at Katrina. You were there for us for Sandy. You were there for us at 9/11. You're always there. And so the reality is this is larger than just being next door neighbors. This is about family. This is an existential relationship that needed to be thought out before just doing this. Now, are we short masked? We sure are. And we're in a jam now with our doctors and medical technicians. Well, and so the president's in a problem.
Yeah, and you're in a jam. Well, so is Canada, because we don't have the adequate medical equipment, protective medical gear for our frontline workers. But today, the 3M company that manufactures medical devices has been pressured by the U.S. Not to export those N95 masks they produced to other countries, including Canada and Latin America. And so as an American, I'm wondering, because, you know, we're all thinking about ourselves, although, you know, we love to share in good times. These are hard times. These are times when everybody across the world is looking for these masks, for these PPEs. As an American, do you instinctively feel that maybe, you know, hoarding this stuff is the best thing to do for your country, and it's each country for itself?
So the president has not only doing this between countries, he's doing this between our own states. For those of you who are paying any attention to this, the president has basically told each of the states, go find it on your own. Go do your own thing. And then yesterday, his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, addressing the United States of America, says the supply, the backup supply for our states is not for our states. It's for the, he basically said, no, you guys think that's for you, it's for us. And they changed the website this morning to dictate how that should even be used. Look, we have a problem in leadership in the country, and unfortunately, we're feeling the impact of it domestically, and he's impacting us on an international basis and with you, our best friend. And all I can say is I'm sorry, and I hope we get through this with the least amount of pain and loss that we can. And we should find ways to work together. And if anybody can find the way, I know Justin Trudeau, Chrystia Freeland, I know your new ambassador well. If anybody can do this, you guys can do it. But it's not it's not going to be an easy lift here because of the jam that he has himself in.
No, it isn't. And you know, we know the prime minister today called the move by Donald Trump a mistake, hinting that there could be some retaliation, just hinting there could be some retaliation from Canada. For instance, there are 3,000 or thousands of nurses and Canadian doctors that work in the States that cross over every day, and maybe they won't cross the border to go to work. So do you see this coming to that? Do you see this escalating to the point where the medicine that the United States sends to Canada, and God knows there's a lot of it, may be stopped by the president? Do you see this getting a lot worse?
I did not see that as a threat by the prime minister to the White House. I saw that as an education moment about the complex and interlocking relationship that we have. 80% of the Canadians live within 100 miles of the U.S. border. We travel and we live together. There are more Americans living in Canada than any other country in the world outside the United States. And so this is much more interlocked than people think. And I think the prime minister was trying to, in his own way, educate the White House that this is a much more complex decision than just a tweet or a quick statement. My father told me when I was a little boy, engage brain before putting mouth into gear. Well, that's my advice to the president today. Engage the brain and strategic thinking before doing a tweet or making decisions like this that affect us for the long term.
And fun fact, Ambassador, this is the day that Canada ratified the new NAFTA Sad, but fun fact, I guess, at the same time. Thanks for your time, former U.S. Ambassador to Canada, Bruce Hayman. Thanks for joining us, and stay safe.
Pleasure.
We're going to take a two-minute break. When we get back, the press gallery will be here. Stay with us.
All simulations, projections, data, and modeling that show the potential impact of this pandemic on the health of Canadians and our healthcare system. Other governments are releasing this information so that researchers and non-governmental organizations can review it and provide advice.
Welcome back. Today, the Ontario government released its modeling data on the COVID-19 outbreak. As you could imagine, it isn't a pretty picture. By the end of April, the number of COVID-19 cases in Ontario could reach 80,000, even with the public practicing physical distancing, while the death toll could reach 1,600 by the end of the month under current conditions. And even with the isolation measures we have in place, the province's total death toll could reach between 3,000 and 15,000 over the next 18 months to 2 years. These are Ontario numbers. The federal government is currently withholding its COVID-19 projections despite numerous calls to release the data. Why withhold the information? Is the government not being transparent enough during a public health crisis? The press gallery is here to discuss. Joining in from our Ottawa Bureau is senior political correspondent Glenn McGregor. We also have CTV's Molly Thomas coming to us from her home in Ottawa. And to help make sense of the modeling data released today, we have former Ontario Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Richard Chabas. Welcome, everybody. Nice to see you all. I know you can't see me, but Dr. Chabas, I want to start with you. Do you think that releasing these figures is a good thing for the public? Are these figures reliable?
Well, of course, they're not figures at all. What they are models, and models can be a very useful adjunct to planning public policy. But what seems to have happened here is that the models seem to be driving public policy. And the problem there is that there are so many uncertainties. There's so much poor data in. We don't even have good agreement on things like the case fatality rate. To use them to drive the decision making seems to be inherently problematic. We've had mathematical models for other diseases, like for SARS and for H1N1, that were wildly, wildly wrong. We had just the recent example from England with the model from the Imperial College that initially said 500,000 people were going to die in Britain, and then a week later they rolled that back to 20,000. These things need to be reviewed carefully, and they need to be tested out before we use them to drive public policy.
So the government, the federal government, the prime minister is telling us that they don't have the right models right now. They don't want to release it. So are they right not to release it, the federal government? Is Ottawa right not to release its own predictions?
Yeah, well, absolutely. They should not be releasing predictions to the public until they have confidence in those predictions. And that means, among other things, making sure that the models can accurately predict events. We don't trust models that predict stock prices until they've proven that they're accurate. We don't buy into weather models until they've proven that they're accurate. The trouble with these Ontario numbers is really twofold. First of all, they're terrifying. I mean, they talk about the potential for 100,000 deaths. That number, I think, is just fear-mongering. And on top of that, they are so self-serving because they congratulate themselves because their own models, first of all, predict how many people would die and then predict how many lives they've saved without really any good evidence to support that. So we need to be very cautious with this sort of thing.
Well, that's disturbing. I have to change topic. Glenn, you're working on a piece for our national news tonight about the Trump administration stopping export of those M95 masks. What is the company saying?
Well, the company is frustrated by this. It is a longtime supplier of these N95 masks, which we're realizing is the gold standard for protecting healthcare workers dealing with the respiratory infections. They've been exporting to Canada for a very long time. And now, as you explained in the earlier segment, that the Trump administration has invoked this wartime measure to stop them from exporting to Canada and Latin America. The company says there are going to be humanitarian consequences for that, specifically that Canadian healthcare workers are not going to be as well protected if we can't get these masks from our regular supplier. And also saying that there could be consequences for the United States because there is a very complicated global supply chain that goes on in the production and distribution of these masks. The vast majority of them are made in Asia. There are two factories, 3M factories, that make N95 masks in the United States, and those are the ones that are affected by the order. But what we're seeing is kind of this supply chain breaking down into kind of a Lord of the Flies scenario where you have countries bidding and competing for these things. You have, as Ambassador Hayman said, you have states within the United States competing with other states for them. It's getting into a really ugly situation. So ugly today, Joyce, that Germany is accusing the U.S. of modern piracy because a shipment of 200,000 N95 masks made in China was transiting through Thailand and was intercepted and diverted back to the United States. Those masks were supposed to be given to healthcare workers in Berlin and also police in Berlin. So it's really becoming a very ugly situation. And also one that Canadians, I think, you see the reactions online, people are furious about this. We consider the U.S. to be our closest neighbor, a longtime friend that we have helped repeatedly in the past. I remember all those emergency workers heading down to New York City after the 9/11 attacks to help out. And this is what happens when you take that America first approach and say that American lives are more important. The health and safety of American healthcare workers comes beyond anybody else. And the Prime Minister, not, as you said, not threatening retaliation, but reminding the U.S. of our contributions, including all those doctors and nurses who cross the Ambassador Bridge from from Windsor into Detroit every day to work in their hospitals. Interesting to see. We expect to hear from President Trump within the hour, see what he says about this today and whether he will back off that order and allow exports back into Canada.
And we know the cabinet has told us, cabinet ministers have told us that they are on the phone with American officials trying to reverse that decision. But Molly, also, there's another question we've been asking the Prime Minister. We've asked him again and again for those same models that Ontario released today for the whole country, asking him, so what should Canadians expect about COVID? Where is this going? Do you think that this kind of information, we are journalists, we want to know, so we push them for the answers, but I'm wondering, are we asking the right question? Is this the kind of information that people need to know, or is this going to make people feel worse? Especially, as Dr. Shaba says, these may not be totally accurate. They're just a prediction.
I think what they do, Joyce, is that they give people possible consequences. And I think giving people at least a little bit of a landscape, especially when you're looking at our neighbors to the south, like the United States, that has projections out there, people are wondering, hey, what is happening here? And we're in our third week here in Canada where people are staying indoors or staying in their homes. And I think they want to know why they're doing that and what is it contributing to. I look outside, spring is right around the corner. It's going to be nice outside. And so I think the projections, while they may not be, Dr. Shabas was very clear, real-time data, and Dr. Tam talked about that too, they give you some sort of consequence to breaking the rules, to gathering with your friends, to going to a skate park, to having people over at your home, that they actually put into perspective that this is a very serious virus and that we have to pay attention, not just in week three, but in week six as well.
Well, that's interesting. Dr. Shabas, that is the question we're all asking. How long will this take? Is there any way, at least the figures today released by Ontario gave us an idea, although it was a pretty grim picture, it gave us sort of an idea. Is there any way to tell where this is going in your expert opinion?
Well, the only way in the long run that you can be protected from a respiratory virus is by immunity. And there are only two ways you get immunity. You either get a vaccine, which would be great, but I don't see any immediate prospect for that, or you develop enough immunity in your population from people who've already had the virus and recovered. We're going to have to go one route or the other. And so the problem, the fundamental problem with what we're doing now is that we may or may not be somewhat effective at reducing the short-term impact, but all we're doing is delaying the pain, because sooner or later, unless we're fortunate and the virus somehow disappears in the warm weather, which would be great, but I don't think anybody's really expecting that, it's going to come back. It's going to stick around. And the question is, how long is it practical? Is it reasonable to keep children out of schools, to keep people away from their jobs, to keep people indoors? I'm not sure what the long-term strategy here is at all.
Can there be a long-term strategy? I mean, you wrote an article in the Globe and Mail four weeks ago saying, this is not the huge thing that everybody is saying it is. And look, 4 weeks later, we're here and we're talking to you, and the scenario has changed.
Well, certainly when I wrote that, it was fading away in Asia and the numbers were very small. But let's keep a little perspective on this. There have been fewer than 60,000 deaths from COVID-19 in 4 months. There are 160,000 people who die every single day in the world. Since January 1st, we've had, fewer than 60,000 deaths from COVID-19. We probably had in the neighborhood of 200,000 deaths from influenza. We had a pandemic in 1957, which I'm old enough to remember, the Asian flu, which killed about 2 million people in a world that had one-third the population our current world had, and that has now, and that wasn't considered to be a global crisis. So I don't know. I'm not suggesting this isn't a serious problem and that we don't have to deal with it seriously. On the other hand, respiratory viruses are a fact of life. And they kill people, primarily old people, and that's just the way of the world. And as I say, if you seriously want to deal with them, the only way, the only biological way, with all this hope about various other strategies, the only biological way we have of fighting them is with immunity. And there are only two ways of getting that. And one of them, I'm afraid, if you don't have a vaccine, is that people have to get infected. So a country like Sweden, for example, is taking a very different approach. Now, will that be more effective? I don't know. But it is a different approach. And it's the kind of discussion we have to have here, because at least it allows us to balance the current costs, the social and economic costs that we're paying here, with some long-term vision of where this is actually taking us.
Glenn, I'm wondering, we need to have a conversation about this. We have the Prime Minister coming out every day now for the last 2 weeks and answering questions, followed by the ministers giving their press conference. Sometimes the questions are frustratingly vague, and we complain about them after. But I'm wondering what you think about the strategy, the communication strategy. Are people getting the information they need?
I think in general they are. I think the strategy has been good. I think it initially started out that they were bringing the Prime Minister out every day to show that he was healthy, because he was in self-isolation with his wife, who had tested positive for COVID-19. And I just want to refer back to what Dr. Shaba said, and respectfully, I'll note that his opinion is contrary to a lot of public health officers' opinions on this, and I will also disagree with him on the release of data, and this ties into your question about the answers we're getting from the Prime Minister. We have to remember that this is information that the government is using to inform its decisions. It's not perfect data. Theresa Tam has said it's good data. We're never going to have perfect data until this is all over months and years from now. Then we can look back retrospectively. But this is the decision, the data that's being used to make decisions about whether or not people should leave their houses, whether businesses should be closed. And it's also data that is created on behalf of Canadians, and we have a legal right to it. We should know what that data is showing the people who are making those choices, and we should be able to cross-examine them based on that data. So, yes, the data could be way off, but it's the best we have right now. People should be able to know about it. The Prime Minister, I hope, will follow the lead of Premier Ford and also Premier Legault in Quebec, who's also planning to release their provincial data, and show people what are the worst-case and best-case scenarios. This is something we have a legal right to see as Canadians. It doesn't belong to the government. It belongs to all of us, and it's the most crucial test of that of that right is during a time of crisis like this, when the piece of information that they are not revealing is, in best case and worst case scenarios, Joyce, how many of us might actually die?
Yeah, can I answer that? Because I think you're making the mistake of considering a model to be data. I agree we should have full access to data, and governments at all levels have been very good at getting the data out. But a model is not data. It's a projection. It's a prediction. It's predicting what's going to happen in tomorrow night's hockey game, not what happened last night. And that's fundamentally different. And because of the implications
so,
of this.
So, Dr. Shaba,
we need to analyze these things carefully before we release them to the public, because they can be very misleading and very inflammatory.
Happened here in Ontario. I don't see people running out in the streets screaming once they've seen the figures. The reaction has been to the Ontario release. Yes, this is serious. This is about what we expected. We knew that our actions will affect that range of deaths. And that's the way people are responding to it, as they should. I don't see mass hysteria. And I also don't see the opposite reaction of people saying, oh, this is all going to blow over.
I think people are terrified.
I want to bring in Molly here. I want to bring in Molly here because, you know, I don't think that Ontario released these figures, as flawed as they may be, to scare people. It was to inform them. This is what happens if we follow these directives. This is what could happen if we don't. Maybe we need a harsher measures. When you heard yesterday, Molly, the Premier of Ontario saying that Ontarians are entitled to know what we know, what was your reaction? Were you thinking yes, or were you thinking, ooh, I don't think this is information we should have?
Joyce, you're asking me as a journalist. I mean, as a journalist, I always want to know that information, so I don't know if I'm the right person to ask. But what I find interesting online is, like, you can see the reactions of people. And because the provinces are bringing this out, because there's other countries like the U.S. and New Zealand that have done it before, people are thirsty for that information here. I think about the U.S., 10 times our size, has a decentralized healthcare system and was able to gather at least projection points from their teams to be able to put those projections out. People are wondering, hey, we live in Canada. Yes, healthcare is provincial, but how is this so slow? Why is this taking so long to be able to figure out what the projections are for our country? So yes, I want to know, but if you look online, people are very, very curious about this. They want to know. They're asking why this isn't coming out. You can feel the pressure on the government, whose tone has completely changed to, hey, in a few days, we're going to have these numbers for you. But they have to have some kind of modeling right now, for sure.
Thank you, Molly. Thank you, Glenn. Dr. Shabas, that's all the time we have. And that's your, so thanks for being there. And that's your Power Play Day in Politics. Thank you for choosing us here and being with us this week. We'll be back right here on Monday. And now let's head back to our Toronto newsrooms for CTV's continuing coverage of COVID-19. Have a good weekend.